Right now, there is an AI system valued at nearly $1 trillion, and it's mapping out theoretical reasoning that honestly surpasses human logic.
Yeah, it really does.
But, and here's the crazy part, right down the street, the actual engineer who built it is probably screaming at his laptop because a little pop-up window is asking him for, like, the 40th time if he wants to approve a basic file transfer. So welcome to the deep dive.
Thank you. And it really is the defining friction of our era right now. I mean, we're engineering these systems capable of writing entire software stacks from scratch, yet the actual interface where those systems meet human psychology is just profoundly broken.
It's completely broken, and we're going to explore that exact tension today. For you listening, our mission is to examine this massive, almost contradictory rift happening in technology right this second. We're pulling from the Tech and AI Daily Briefing from Friday, May 29, 2026, and I promise you, by the end of this deep dive, you will understand why the hottest trends in tech involve both near-trillion-dollar AI mega deals and a 60-second browser game about the pure, unadulterated torture of clicking a button that says approve.
It really is torture, yeah.
It is. And to help us connect these massive tectonic industry shifts to the everyday reality of, actually building and using tech, I've got the perfect expert guide with me.
Happy to be here.
So let's just jump right into the deep end here. The most staggering number hitting the wire today is Anthropic's Series H funding round. They just closed a $65 billion raise.
Which is just an astronomical amount of capital.
It's insane. It places the company at roughly a $965 billion valuation. So, okay, let's unpack this, because that makes Anthropic the most capitalized, pure-play AI safety lab on Earth.
Yeah, and that phrase, pure play, that requires a bit of context to really understand why this specific number is so disruptive.
Right, because they aren't Google or Microsoft.
Exactly. When you look at Google or Microsoft, I mean, they are massive conglomerates, right? Their AI research is fundamentally entangled with legacy products. You've got cloud hosting, search advertising, enterprise software suites.
It's all connected to keeping the old machine running.
Precisely. But Anthropic is structured entirely around the models themselves. So this influx of $65 billion, it isn't going toward like marketing a new spreadsheet feature.
Oh, wow.
It translates immediately into raw compute. It buys racks of next generation GPUs, data center, cooling infrastructure, and the massive power contracts that are required to actually stand toe to toe with OpenAI.
So they are completely unburdened by legacy tech. They are basically just building the brain.
Just the brain. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we are already seeing the velocity of that singular focus because they immediately rolled out Claude Opus 4.8.
Which is a huge deal.
It is. This isn't just a minor patch. The capabilities show a severe jump in reasoning and coding benchmarks. And this is particularly critical for developers who are building on OpenClaw, which is the open source framework used to hook these AI models into local machine environments and basic tools.
Okay, let's actually define that for a second.
Yeah.
Because OpenClaw comes up a lot when we talk about agents. It's essentially the bridge,
Yeah.
right? Like, it lets the AI brain talk to your laptop's terminal or your web browser.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It's the bridge.
And with Opus 4.8, we are seeing a major shift in how that bridge is used, specifically with this update in Claude Code called Dynamic Workflows.
Right. Dynamic workflows are fundamentally changing the game.
So agents can now adapt their execution paths based on runtime context
Right.
rather than just, following a rigid script.
I was trying to picture this, and my analogy is kind of like this. Old automation was like a train on a track.
You knew exactly where it was going, and if a boulder fell on the track, the train just crashed. Dynamic workflows feel a lot more like an off-road vehicle that maps its own route through a forest based on where the trees are at that exact millisecond.
And spot on.
But I have to push back here. Doesn't giving an autonomous agent the ability to just rewrite its own execution path sound like a recipe for absolute chaos?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, wait, so if I give it my credit card to book a flight, what stops it from deciding a private jet charter is technically the most efficient route because it evaluated a new path on the fly.
Yeah.
How do you actually program a boundary for common sense?
Well, it sounds like chaos because without a structural mechanism to contain it, it absolutely is chaos. You want the off-road vehicle to navigate around the trees, but you definitely do not want it driving into a lake because it evaluated the water as a shortcut.
Exactly. Please don't drive my credit card into a lake.
Right. And this is the core fear for developers orchestrating these agents. It's exactly why we are simultaneously seeing the emergence of highly specific control layers. Like, there's a new open source tool called MATX.
MATX.
Yeah, and it functions as an executable context layer for data agents.
Executable context layer. I mean, that sounds like a very heavy piece of enterprise jargon.
Yeah.
What is the actual mechanism there? How does NADX stop my AI from chartering the private jet?
So think of MATX not just as a map, but as the physics engine of that off-road environment.
Oh, okay.
In a traditional setup, you give an AI its instructions once, right at the beginning of a task. But in a dynamic workflow, the AI is making thousands of micro decisions a second.
It's constantly adjusting.
Right. So NADX intercepts the execution constantly. It evaluates the terrain, millisecond by millisecond, and instantly revokes read or write access if the AI attempts an action outside a strictly predefined boundary.
So it's injecting limits on the fly.
Exactly. It dynamically injects hidden, non-negotiable system prompts at every single fork in the road. You give the agent the freedom to think dynamically, but you physically restrict its capability to act destructively at the exact moment of execution.
Wow. Okay. So we have these trillion-dollar brains mapping dynamic paths, and we are building these incredibly complex physics engines to keep them out of the lake.
That's the reality of it.
But here's the structural flaw with those dynamic workflows, right? The AI can map a million paths a second, but if it has to ask a human for permission to open every single door on that path, the speed advantage completely
Yes,
evaporates.
gone.
And that exact bottleneck is what caused a massive meltdown on Hacker News this week.
The friction point where silicon meets carbon.
Exactly. My favorite story from the TechWire today is this 60-second browser game called ContinueYN. It is essentially a satirical game that perfectly skewers the UX hell, the user experience nightmare of constant AI agent approval prompts.
It's brilliant in its simplicity.
It really is. And here's where it gets really interesting. This silly little browser game hit 158 points on Hacker News. For a community that usually spends its time debating deep architectural back-end engineering, that is a massive cultural signal.
Oh, for sure.
It proves that this specific pain point, this AI permission fatigue, has reached critical mass.
Well, the irony of modern automation is that in our desperate attempt to make it safe, we have designed systems that require constant manual human validation.
Right, which completely defeats the purpose.
Exactly. We built AI to collapse timelines and save labor, but instead, we've basically turned highly paid engineers into glorified rubber stamps.
Just clicking approve all day.
Yes. You get these endless prompts. Can I access this directory? Can I run this Python script? Can I open this port? When a developer is furiously clicking yes 50 times a minute just to let a script finish, the human becomes the latency.
It's the digital equivalent of hiring a brilliant executive assistant, but they refuse to buy you a cup of coffee without calling you to individually confirm the purchase of the cup, the purchase of the beans, and the acquisition of the hot water.
That is exactly what it feels like.
It is exhausting, but this isn't just a local developer problem, is it? We are seeing this exact same structural failure playing out at a massive global scale. Look at what YouTube just announced.
Right, the AI labeling shift.
Yeah, they are moving away from the honor system entirely and implementing automatic AI detection and labeling for AI-generated videos.
And what's fascinating here is the technical capitulation. I mean, YouTube previously relied on opt-in metadata. They asked creators, please click this box if you used AI to generate this video.
Which is the exact same dynamic as asking a developer to click approve on a local terminal prompt.
It is. And predictably, human nature took over. Creators just ignored the friction. The incentives to bypass the label were simply too high.
Of course, if it hurts the algorithm, they won't click it.
So, the platform is forced to abandon voluntary compliance and build an algorithmic enforcement mechanism. They are deploying visual detection models to forcefully apply the labels.
Wow.
When the largest video platform on Earth admits that human-driven transparency has failed, I mean, every other major central platform is going to feel immense pressure to shift from opt-in governance to automated policing.
And if the platforms don't do it themselves, the governments are stepping in with massive regulatory teeth to force the issue.
They definitely are.
Look at the European Union. They just handed Temu, the giant Chinese e-commerce marketplace, a 200 million euro fine under the Digital Services Act for hosting illegal product listings. I mean, the EU is not issuing warnings anymore. They're drawing blood.
This brings us to the actual mechanism of the Digital Services Act, or the DSA, which was explicitly designed for this era of infinite scale.
Also.
Well, The traditional model of internet regulation relied on post-flagging. You'd wait for a user to report a bad product or an illegal deepfake, and then you take it down. The DSA shifts that liability completely. It mandates proactive algorithmic auditing. Whether you are dealing with millions of unvetted products on Temu or billions of synthetic videos on a social network, the volume has completely outgrown human moderation.
You literally can't hire enough humans to check it all.
Exactly. So a 200 million euro fine is a severe systemic shock to the global tech sector. It signals that if your platform cannot automatically govern its own scale, you will bleed capital.
So how do engineers and builders cope with this? You're trying to build software in a world where AI agents require complex dynamic guardrails, platforms are deploying automated policing algorithms, and international regulatory bodies are dropping nine-figure fines.
It's a lot.
It is suffocating. And in response to that, we are seeing a distinct, almost visceral counter-movement in the newsletter. Mm-hmm. Developers are retreating to radical simplicity.
Yes, the pendulum is swinging back.
They're abandoning the cutting edge for battle-tested fundamentals and just, you know, local control.
Well, when the macro environment becomes overwhelmingly abstracted and fraught with liability, engineers naturally pull back to infrastructure they can fully understand and control.
They just want something they can touch.
Right. You stop trying to invent new architecture and retreat to things that simply cannot fail.
Let's talk about how that retreat manifests technically, because there's a major argument gaining traction right now from DVOS. They're suggesting that developers should just use Postgres, which is a very traditional, highly reliable database, to manage durable workflows, instead of spinning up heavy, dedicated workflow engines like Temporal.
This is a really hotly debated topic right now.
Yeah. And for anyone who hasn't built back-end infrastructure, Temporal is essentially a massive, complex traffic control system. It's specifically designed to keep track of what code is running and where it failed. But let me challenge this DBOS approach for a second.
Go for it.
If we are exhausted by bloat, isn't shoving workflow execution into Postgres basically using a hammer to turn a screw? I mean, you are overloading a database that was fundamentally meant to store rows of data. Aren't we just trading a complex workflow engine for an overburdened database?
That's the common critique, yeah. And it raises an important question about architectural pragmatism. The DBOS argument isn't about adhering to the theoretical purity of what a database should do.
Okay, then what's the goal?
It is about deeply understanding the mechanics of state. Postgres has been hardened over roughly three decades. It handles ACID compliance, meaning transactions are processed reliably better than almost anything else on Earth.
Right, it's virtually bulletproof at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, a workflow engine like Temporal uses an event-sourced log architecture that requires standing up new servers, learning a new paradigm, and introducing a massive new point of failure into your stack.
Which is exactly what developers are trying to avoid right now.
Yes. By using Postgres to track the state of your application, you are relying on infrastructure you already have running. You are choosing the concrete reliability of a known quantity over the theoretical perfection of a shiny new dependency.
Just give me the tool that works every single time without crashing.
Exactly.
And that intense craving for flawless fundamental tools brings us to the release of BTTF. It is a command line, daytime Swiss Army knife built by Burnt Sushi.
Oh, Burnt Sushi is a legend in the open source community.
Right. For context, Burnt Sushi is the developer who wrote RipGrep, which revolutionized the way engineers search through massive code bases simply because it was absurdly fast and bypassed all the bloated ways search used to work.
Yeah, it was a game changer.
And now he has released BTTF to parse, convert, and do arithmetic on date times. The tech community is celebrating it wildly just because it handles edge cases correctly.
Which sounds so simple, but it's not.
That's what I want to ask you. Why is something as seemingly fundamental as the time so universally hated and broken in software engineering?
Because time is not a mathematical certainty. It is a messy human construct layered over planetary physics.
That is a great way to describe it.
When you write software that deals with time, you aren't just counting seconds. You have to account for leap years. You have to account for leap seconds, which are occasionally added to coordinate atomic time with the Earth's slowing rotation.
That's right, the leap second.
And it gets worse. You have daylight saving time shifts that happen on different days depending on local legislation, historical calendar changes, and massive time zone databases that update constantly.
It's just a nightmare of edge cases.
Unix time, IS 88601 formatting, it is a literal labyrinth. So when a developer known for deep, meticulous optimization releases a tool that just handles the physics and the politics of time flawlessly, it feels like a revelation.
It really does.
It does one highly specific, incredibly difficult thing, and it does it without generating a single error prompt.
It is the exact opposite of an unpredictable dynamic AI agent.
Mm.
You know exactly what it will do. And this craving for absolute control isn't just contained to software. It's bleeding heavily into physical hardware. We got early scoops today on the highly anticipated Raspberry Pi 6 and a slew of new microcontrollers.
The hardware space is heating up again.
It really is. The demand from makers and the self-hosting community for capable single-board computers is at an all-time high.
Because physical hardware is the ultimate local control.
Yes.
If you own the silicon, you own the stack. When you rely on cloud infrastructure, you are vulnerable to arbitrary API pricing hikes, sudden terms of service changes,
yeah,
or a server outage halfway across the country.
You're at their mercy.
Right. But when you hold a microcomputer in your hand, you dictate its rules. It is immunity from platform fatigue.
Which perfectly sets up the most painfully relatable scenario in the tech world today. There is a new guide circulating on how to get indoor Wi-Fi roaming to work correctly using OpenWRT, which is an open source operating system for routers.
I saw that. It's so classic.
It is. For people building their own home networks, getting a phone to seamlessly switch from the living room router to the kitchen router without dropping a connection remains one of the most frustrating technical hurdles. I just have to point out the profound irony here.
It's hilarious, honestly.
We are analyzing a $965 billion company mapping the dynamic logic required for artificial general intelligence, while simultaneously, a highly technical engineer is spending their entire Saturday just trying to get their phone to let go of a weak Wi-Fi signal.
It brilliantly highlights the mechanical reality of networking versus the theoretical promise of AI.
Yeah.
We can simulate human reasoning in a liquid-cooled data center, but seamlessly handing off an 802.1 radio packet 20 feet down a hallway is still an absolute nightmare.
Why is it so hard, though?
The friction happens because of the sticky client problem. In a Wi-Fi network, the router doesn't actually decide when to hand off the connection. The client device, like your phone or laptop, makes that decision.
Mm.
And devices are notoriously stubborn, clinging to a weak signal rather than negotiating a new one. But the motivation to endure that frustration is key here. Taking control of your own network, rewriting the roaming protocols yourself, is a deliberate rebellion against the black box of consumer tech.
It's taking the power back.
Exactly. It is a demand for agency.
So what does this all mean? Look at the sheer spectrum of the landscape we've traveled through today. We started at the absolute zenith of tech valuation, you know, Anthropic's $65 billion war chest and Claude's dynamic workflows mapping their own digital brains.
The very top of the stack.
Exactly. Then we drag those brains down into the operational mud where developers are playing browser games to cope with endless permission prompts, YouTube is forcing algorithmic transparency, and the EU is levying 200 million euro fines on global marketplaces.
And the friction is everywhere.
It is. And finally, we ended up finding solace in the absolute basics: reliable daytime parsing, hardened Postgres databases, and the simple, stubborn joy of physically configuring your own Wi-Fi router.
And for you listening, no matter what your technical background is, you are actively feeling this friction in your daily life.
100%.
Whether you are building enterprise architecture or just trying to get your smart home to turn on the lights without asking for a firmware update, you are living in the space between the limitless, almost terrifying promise of AI scale and the very real human desire for things to just work simply, reliably, and quietly.
It is an absolutely wild time to be interacting with computers. And it leaves me with the one final thought, something for you to mull over as you go about your day.
Let's hear it.
If our AI models are becoming fully dynamic, hyper-intelligent, and capable of autonomous reasoning, but our human platforms, our global regulations, and our own psychological limits are increasingly requiring rigid labels, forced transparency, and constant manual approval checkpoints, well, will the ultimate bottleneck to our technological future actually be a lack of computing power? Or will the real bottleneck simply be the limit of human tolerance for digital bureaucracy? Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, keep questioning the systems you interact with, and we'll see you next time.